Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about whether the weather is normal for winter, another installment of the I Sat Down With series from the University of Montana, and the biggest public school budget in the state. It's Friday, January 31st. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl, and it's my birthday. Yellowstone National Park officials say the coyote that attacked and injured a cross-country skier Tuesday has tested negative for rabies. The unidentified 43-year-old woman was bitten by a coyote while skiing in the Canyon Village area. She was treated for puncture wounds and lacerations to her head and arm before being taken to Mammoth Hot Springs. She was eventually transported to another facility where her medical condition was listed as stable. Officials have not released any further information on her condition. Park staff positively identified and killed the coyote. Wildlife biologist Doug Smith says the young animal was probably starving because it had porcupine quills in its lower jaw and inside its mouth. Federal prosecutors say the former executive director of a nonprofit working to bolster domestic violence services for Native women in Montana was part of a scheme to steal federal grant money. U.S. Attorney's Office charged the former executive director of the Montana Native Women's Coalition, Cheryl Lawrence, yesterday. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has more.
Prosecutors allege Lawrence was taking part in a scheme to steal federal grant dollars funding the nonprofit. Theft of federal grant funds and wire fraud are among the four charges Lawrence faces. She pleaded not guilty to all charges. Lawrence is the third person to be charged in the case. Federal prosecutors charged former board chairwoman Meredith McConnell and former board treasurer Barbara Daychief this summer. They both pleaded not guilty. Authorities say all three women were reimbursed for non-approved trips, including to Las Vegas, and fraudulently took double pay for their work. The nonprofit's former executive director, Tony Plummer Alvernaz, pleaded guilty in 2017 to stealing from the coalition and was sentenced to 1 year in prison. Federal authorities say McConnell and Daychief were among those to receive special training following Plummer Alvernaz's sentencing. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
The first incumbent on Montana's state land board has filed for re-election. Most statewide candidates with seats on the board are either terming out of their jobs this year or seeking a new political office. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
Elsie Arnson is the current Republican Superintendent of Public Instruction and one of five elected officials that sits on the land board that oversees state trust lands. The governor, attorney general, state auditor, and secretary of state also sit on that board. Arnson from Billings filed for re-election this week. Melissa Romano from Helena is the only Democrat in the superintendent of public instruction race. Over a dozen candidates have so far filed to run for Montana's land board seats, which make up Montana's statewide elected executives. Republicans swept all those positions but the governor's office in 2016. The filing for the 2020 election opened January 9th and closes March 9th. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Most of Montana will be bracing for strong, gusty winds, warm temperatures, and heightened fire danger Friday and Saturday. But as Kay Erickson explains, this is just a typical Montana winter.
We are prone to see these warm, dry spells.
That's Joe Lester, Billings National Weather Service meteorologist.
We have been locked into this warm weather pattern for a while, but it's not been anything unprecedented or even that unusual.
Lester says in winter, Montana typically bounces between cold and snowy and warm and dry. Friday and Saturday will be dry, windy, and warm with increased fire danger. Then on Sunday, the bounce begins.
And it does look like our patterns are going to start changing again next week, back to something colder and wetter.
What does this winter pattern portend for spring and summer? Lester says it's just too early to know. I'm Kay Erickson for Yellowstone Public Radio News.
A proposed land deal between the state and a nonprofit foundation could help connect an important piece of grizzly bear habitat between the Cabinet and Purcell Mountains near the small town of Troy. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton explains.
Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is seeking public comment on a proposal to purchase a 50-acre conservation easement along the Kootenai River from the nonprofit Vital Ground. The easement would protect the area from future development and is a small piece of a historical effort to maintain connectivity between the Purcell and Cabinet Mountains. In 2012, FWP solidified a 28,000-acre easement in the area. Both FWP and Vital Ground have been working for years to maintain habitat for grizzly bears making their way between the two mountain ranges in the Cabinet Yak ecosystem, which wildlife officials say is home to roughly 55 bears. Comments on the latest easement are due by February 17th. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
An internationally acclaimed musician and public radio host will be in Bozeman this week to talk to students about making music a career. Rachel Kramer met up with Jennifer Reason of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento to talk about her work attracting new classical music fans and highlighting diversity.
In MSU's Reynolds Recital Hall, Jennifer Reason walks up to a black grand piano on a brightly lit stage. She unlocks the cover over the keys and pushes it back.
So, a really good exercise anyone who's had piano lessons will recognize.
Along with being a pianist, Reason is a vocalist and music director. This week, she's teaching master classes and meeting with students to give advice about making it as a professional musician.
They're getting information from all sides, like music is a hobby, music is not a real job, you'll never make it, 2% of the people maybe do. And I'm here to just demonstrate you can have a career in what you love.
When Reason is back home in Sacramento, she hosts a four-hour classical music program on Capital Public Radio. She says deciding what music to air is a balancing act.
We look back to the war horses like Beethoven and Mozart, but look forward as well.
She says a lot of people have a hard time getting into classical music because it can feel like a dead old white man's club. It's hard for people to relate. That's why she's so excited to introduce people to contemporary composers.
There's composers in South America, there's composers from Africa, there's composers here bringing flavors of the world to this tradition and carrying it forward the same way that those dead white men did when they were alive, right? They were cutting edge once, and this is our cutting edge. And there's finally female representation. In particular, that's a passion of mine. They've been ignored for so long.
Reason will be performing in Livingston and Bozeman this weekend, along with MSU faculty Mike Nelson on horn and Angela on violin. Several of the pieces in the concert were composed by women in the 1920s and 50s. Reason plays part of a piece created by Ethel Smyth, an English composer and member of the women's suffrage movement. More information about the upcoming performances are available on our website, ypradio.org. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
We're now going to share another kind of story from voices you might not hear otherwise. I Sat Down With is a series from the University of Montana Journalism School and is reported, written, and produced by students. Student Allison Simcoe recently sat down with her cousin, a cop. Simcoe brings us Jamie's story about the intimate moments she shares with strangers living through the worst moments of their lives, moments she never forgets.
My name is Allison Simcoe, and I spoke with my cousin, Jamie Merrifield, about her career in law enforcement. Jamie served as an armed guard, detective, and hostage negotiator for the city of Missoula, Montana, for 23 years. We talked about a particular case that stands out in her memory.
One of the first ones was a drug overdose. And it was a mom who had brought her daughter back from Seattle because her daughter was addicted to heroin. And the mom brought her home to try to help her and had gotten her clean. And they were living in a small apartment here in Missoula. It was just the two of them. There wasn't a dad in the family. The daughter went out with her friends one night and stayed out late. And the next morning, her friends came over at noon to check on her to see what she was doing. And when they went into her bedroom, she had passed away from a drug overdose. The thing that sticks out right away from that was that she was clearly dead and had been dead for several hours. And they were trying to perform CPR and were asking me to do the same. And I knew at that point it was not going to make a difference. And the mom at one point grabbed onto the front of my uniform and pulled me down to the floor. She was a tiny lady, but she was so upset. And she laid on the floor in my arms and cried and said, I will never be okay again. And I just remember at that time thinking how tragic life can be and how it impacts all of us. It impacted us as we walked away from it. I would think of that mom often. I knew where she worked. And I would go in. Sometimes I would ask for her. Sometimes I wouldn't. She never recognized me if she saw me after that, which is not uncommon. Because I am a memory from a very bad time. Most of the time in law enforcement, you are the memory of something very bad that happened in their life. We don't show up at people's houses because it's your 50th birthday or because you got a promotion. We show up when something very bad has happened. And so I actually was okay with it. I would see her and she looked, every time I saw her, she just looked broken and sad. I'd never saw her smile. About a year and a half to 2 years later, I went into where she worked and I asked a coworker and they started to cry and said she'd been in a very low speed car accident with no injuries and went home that night and passed away. I thought at the time the cause was supposed to be a spleen injury, but it was a broken heart. She never would have lived again without her daughter. And it was heartbreaking. And I think every officer out there goes through that time where you think you're just doing a job, but it's so much bigger than that. If you saw someone lose a family member, that's such an end of a chapter in their life that you were there for, and they don't know you, but you're in their home and they're looking to you for answers and for help, and you may never see them again. And I think it's something people don't quite understand. We don't just walk away. We don't chalk it up to another call or another suicide or another domestic, another sexual assault. Every one of them takes a toll on an officer. You have to do the best you can by that case and go on to the next one. And like I said, you hug your kids and your spouse and thank God you have them.
You've been listening to my cousin, Jamie Merrifield, a retired police officer for the city of Missoula. In Montana, I'm Allison Simcoe.
That was University of Montana student Allison Simcoe. For the University of Montana Journalism School's I Sat Down With series. As the largest school district in Montana faces an over $4 million budget deficit, some are asking how the budget became so unbalanced. YPR News spoke with school administrators to find out if the proposed cuts to staff and operations will fix the problem, and if the Billings School District will face similar shortfalls in the future. They say the problem is bigger than Billings. Billings School District administrators are proposing cutting 40 full-time employees and reducing building operational costs by 10% to make up for the $4.2 million deficit. When asked at the January school board meeting this week if the cuts would fully solve budget problems for the district, Superintendent Greg Upham said no.
I don't know if we can fix this in Billings. I don't know if SD2 can fix this. I think it's bigger than that.
Upham started as superintendent in 2018. Chief Financial Officer for the district, Craig Van Nuys, first noticed the shortfall shortly after he started the job that same year.
It first caught my eye in late March of last spring. Took really a good chunk of April identifying what I had found, researching it, and making sure that it was definitely the deficit amount we were seeing before I took it over to Superintendent Upham.
After finding the budget deficit, the superintendent's office worked on the proposed reduction plan for about 9 months before presenting it to the public. The 40 employees will be cut from music, gifted and talented, library, reading and math intervention programs, general education, support staff, and administrative positions. The 10% reduction in building operational costs will mean less material resources for teachers.
That can't hold and can't last. Even at 10%, it makes it extremely difficult, if not impossible, and we'll find out come May if we can make it through.
School administrators say several different factors led to the current budget shortfall, mainly a high percent of the budget going toward employee salaries. Currently, employees account for 96% of the budget. The administration's goal is to reduce it to 90%.
The stark reality in this is the cause of this issue are FTE. The solution is in FTE.
Kathy Aragon served as a member of the Billings School Board from 2007 until 2014. She said a lack of transparency and poor financial decisions from the past administration made her resign.
I talked to city planners, I talked to the health department, I talked to council people, and we recognized collectively, we looked back at some of the decisions that Billings Public Schools had made that were short-sighted and costly.
Aragon cites the closure and reopening of Beartooth Elementary School in 2008, which she said cost the district greatly. Aragon says she predicted there would be financial problems when the two newest middle schools were built over the past 3 years using bond measures.
You've got to plan ahead. You've got to live within your means. You can't build two new buildings when you can't afford to staff them.
Superintendent Upham says he stands by the decision to build two new middle schools. According to his office, Billings Elementary and Middle Schools are currently running at about 96% capacity. Billings isn't the only school district facing huge budget shortfalls. Helena Public Schools announced in late January they will provide early retirement incentives for 40 longtime teachers to make up for a predicted $1 million deficit. According to a financial consultant, Helena may face a deficit of about $650,000 next school year and $1.9 million the year after. Billings Superintendent Upham.
You're seeing, at least I'm seeing out in the state, other communities that are experiencing some quite large reductions or deficits, not at our level, but you have to remember that we are just about twice the size of the largest district to us. We're a little over 17,000 students, 3,000 staff, and 33 schools.
Schools in Montana get the majority of their funding from the State General Education Fund. 80% comes from the state government, and the remaining 20% comes from the local tax base. State funds go to schools in two ways, at a base rate corresponding to district size and also per student. Billings struggles with both methods because it's almost twice as big as any other district. The majority of students in the Billings School District are being funded at the lowest rate possible. Administrators and community members say they want to look to the state legislature for long-term solutions, starting with changes to the school funding formula. If they are unsuccessful, some board members suggested they may attempt to sue the state for the funds they need. For YPR News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.